16. Legion. The sea gave up its dead, and death and the grave gave up their dead. Revelations 20:13. When Cordelia arrived at the Institute in the late afternoon, she found Lucy and the merry thieves in the ballroom, clearly taking advantage of the fact that Will and Tessa had gone on a day patrol. White sheets had been thrown over the furniture and the piano, and the only light came from the arched windows, whose heavy velvet curtains had been pulled back. Even in the short time that had passed since the ball, the floor had grown lightly grained with dust. Lucy, Christopher, James, Matthew and Thomas were standing in a circle around an object that had been placed in the middle of the room. As Cordelia drew near them, she recognised it as the pyxis Anna had handed to James the night before. In the watery daylight, Cordelia could see it more clearly. It was made of a dark golden wood, with the pattern of the Ouroboros, the snake swallowing its own tail, burned into four of its sides. A handle protruded from the top.
"Cordelia!" Lucy exclaimed. "We were just exchanging information. We learned a great deal that was important at the Enclave meeting last night, and it sounds as if you did something or other at the Hell Ruel. Nothing that compelling, no doubt, but we cannot all be spies."
"I heard about the meeting from my brother this morning," said Cordelia, joining the others in their makeshift circle. Like Cordelia, Lucy and the boys were in gear. James wore a Norfolk jacket over his, with the storm collar turned up. Locks of black hair tumbled over his forehead and kissed the tops of his cheekbones. She looked away quickly before their eyes could meet.
"The quarantine and all the rest."
Alistair was still angry at her, but to be fair to him, he had been gentle in breaking the bad news about Oliver Haywood. She did not know what to say about it now, though. She had not known Oliver, except as a presence at Barbara's side, but the others had. She could not imagine what they felt, especially Thomas, who looked even more tense and strained than he had before. "It seems even more urgent to find and trap the demon responsible for this contagion now, before it attacks anyone else," she said at last. Christopher enthusiastically waved an enormous book he was holding, his glasses balanced on the tip of his nose. The words "On the Uses of Pyxites and Other Phylacteries" were stamped across the front in gold. "It appears that this generation of pyxis is fairly simple. When you wish to trap a demon, you first wound or weaken it. Then you place the pyxis on the ground nearby and speak the words Tham Tholach Thachembaor, and the demon will be sucked into the box." The pyxis wobbled sharply, nearly tipping onto its side. Everyone jumped about a foot back.
"It's alive," Thomas said, staring. "Not the pyxis, I mean. Well, you know what I mean."
"Indeed," said James. "I see a flaw in our plan." Matthew nodded.
"I do as well. What if the pyxis has an occupant? There is no real reason to assume the box at Hypatia's was empty. It could have had a demon in it all these years."
They all stared at each other.
"What would happen if we tried to put another demon in there?" Cordelia asked at last. "Could they both fit?"
"It isn't a good idea," said Christopher, consulting the book. "Since we don't know what kind of demon is already in there, we don't know if there will be enough space. Pyxides are bigger inside than they appear, but still finite."
"Well, then we have to empty this pyxis out," Lucy said practically. "Anything could be in there. It could be a greater demon."
"What ho," said Christopher sadly.
"I'm sure it isn't," said James. "Still, let's relocate to the sanctuary. No matter what happens, we can at least keep it contained until help arrives."
"Why not?" said Matthew. "Surely there's no way this plan can go wrong."
James raised an eyebrow. "Have you got another idea?"
"I think we should do it," said Thomas. "It's ridiculous to come this far and turn back."
Lucy sniffed.
"Well, you'd all better hope it works. especially you, James, because if Mum and Papa find out you released a demon in the sanctuary, they will feed you to it.
James shot Lucy a dark older brother glare that almost made Cordelia giggle. She had always been a little jealous of the closeness James and Lucy shared, something she had always wanted with Alistair but never had. It was nice that at some moments they were perfectly ordinary. They relocated themselves to the sanctuary, James carrying the Pyxis carefully, as if it were an infernal device that might explode at any moment. Cordelia found herself walking beside James and Lucy. She wondered if she and James would ever discuss what had happened the night before in the Whispering Room, or if she would be left to go quietly mad wondering about it.
"Don't worry," Lucy said to her brother. "It won't be like it was with Papa."
"What do you mean?" Cordelia asked.
James said, "When he was a child, my father opened a Pyxis with tragic consequences. My Aunt Ella was killed." Cordelia was horrified.
"Maybe we shouldn't. This will be different," Lucy said,
and Cordelia wasn't sure if Lucy was reassuring herself or James.
"We know what we're getting into. Papa didn't."
They had arrived at the sanctuary, the only room in the Institute where downworlders could freely enter without being invited in by a shadow hunter. It was warded all over with spells, preventing them from entering the main body of the Institute. Meetings with prominent downworlders were often held there, and downworlders could even seek refuge in a sanctuary under the Accords. It was certainly clear that the London Institute had once been a cathedral, and a large one. Massive stone pillars stretched up to a vaulted roof. Thomas had produced a box of Vestas and was moving around the room, lighting a dozen enormous candelabras, their sconces stuffed with fat white candles that cast a glimmering light. The tapestries and pillars were all traced with the designs of runes, as were the tiles of the floor. Cordelia had to admit that if one was going to release a demon, this seemed one of the better places to do it. In the middle of the room was a dry stone fountain, in the centre of which stood the statue of an angel with folded wings, its stone face streaked with black lines like tears. James set the box on the floor, directly on top of a rune of angelic power. He knelt down, studying the Pyxis. After a moment, he took an unlit seraph blade from the inside of his coat. "Arm yourselves, everyone," he said. Cordelia unsheathed Cortana. The others drew seraph blades as James had done, save Thomas, who took out his bolus. James reached out and took hold of the handle of the Pyxis. Cordelia's hand tightened on the hilt of her sword. James twisted the handle sideways, as if turning a corkscrew. There was a loud click as the Pyxis popped open. All through the sanctuary, the white candles spat and guttered. James sprang back, raising his blade. There was a sound like the whistle of a train at night, and smoke billowed from the open Pyxis, bringing with it a foul, burnt smell. Cordelia coughed, raising Katana. She heard James call out, "Barakiel!" And the light of his seraph blade cut through the smoke, followed by the blades of the others, Matthew, Christopher, and Lucy. Something was rising through the smoke. Something like a massive caterpillar, greenish in colour, with a segmented, undulating body and a smooth head slashed across by a lipless mouth. The mouth cracked open, showing row upon row of blackened teeth. Then, to Cordelia's surprise, it spoke.
"At last I am free," it hissed. "I, a Galliarept, am free to recover the domain of my master, stolen from him by a demon of great cunning. I shall retrieve his lost world and flood this one with blood and death."
Its blind head turned toward the shadow hunters.
"Those who have freed me, what is thy bidding? Speak, I am commanded to do anything you ask."
"Anything?" said Matthew curiously. There was a flash of light as James's seraph blade arced through the smoke and plunged into the demon's middle. Black ichor sprayed as the demon shrieked in a high, chittering voice. The candles gutted and went out as James pulled his blade free. He was spattered with black fluid, his jaw set, his eyes glittering. The demon howled and vanished, leaving only smoke and stink behind. Lucy staggered back, coughing, her face screwed up in disgust.
"But it would have done our bidding," Matthew protested.
"It seemed untrustworthy," said James, wiping ichor from his face with his sleeve. His seraph blade had gone dark.
"I thought he seemed all right for a demon," said Christopher.
"You know?"
"What is going on here?" said a loud voice.
They all spun around, Cordelia raising Cortana reflexively. She waved smoke away from her face and stared. Someone had come in through the door to the street outside. A tall man, very tall, with a shock of black hair. His skin was brown, a shade darker than Cordelia's own, his eyes gold-green and slit-pupiled like a cat's. He was dressed as if for a summer wedding, in a grey frock coat and trousers, with grey suede gloves and boots. The outfit was topped off by a magnificent waistcoat of grey and magenta brocade, a walking stick, and bright magenta spats.
"Magnus Bane," said Matthew, with a mixture of amazement and horror.
Magnus Bane walked some distance into the sanctuary, shaking his head as he studied the scene before him.
"I want to know what you're doing, but I must confess I'm afraid to find out," he said. "A spot of demon summoning, I gather."
"It's a bit complicated," said James. "Hello, Magnus. It's good to see you."
"Last time I saw you, you were face down in the Serpentine," Magnus said cheerfully. "Now you're fiddling with a pyxis. I see you have decided to follow in the long Herondale tradition of poor decision-making."
"So have I,"
said Lucy, determined not to be left out.
"I came all the way from Jakarta to have a meeting with Tessa and Will about this whole daylight demon plague business," Magnus said. "Yet when I knocked on the front door, no one answered. Thus, I was forced to come in through the sanctuary."
"It's odd they would have asked you to come here now," said Thomas. "Everyone over 18 is out searching for the demons responsible for the attacks." Magnus furrowed his brow. He lifted his hand to stare at the expensive-looking watch on his wrist and groaned.
"It seems that I forgot to turn my watch backward, and therefore I have arrived 6 hours early. Bloody hell."
Matthew looked delighted.
"We could have tea. I am a true enthusiast of your work, Mr. Bane. Also, your personal style, your waistcoats alone."
"Matthew, do shut up," said Thomas. "Mr. Bane doesn't want to talk about waistcoats."
"Untrue," said Magnus. "I always want to talk about waistcoats. But I admit I'm more curious about this pyxis."
He drew closer and poked at the box with his Malacca walking stick.
"Am I correct in deducing that you opened the box on purpose and let a palpus demon out?"
"Yes," said James.
"Why?" said Magnus.
"We need to be able to use the pyxis," Matthew burst out, "to trap a demon. So it had to be empty. We were just clearing it out."
James sighed. "Matthew, you would be a terrible spy. You might not break under torture, but you'd tell someone anything they wanted to know in exchange for a nice pair of trousers."
"Oh, for goodness sake," Cordelia said. She turned to Magnus. "You want this demon business over, right? You don't want any more shadow hunters to die."
Magnus looked startled to be addressed so forcefully. "I am generally not on the side of murderous demons, no."
"Then perhaps you could help us," James said, and quickly outlined their plan, or at least as much of it as he could tell without breaking faith with Ragnar. Their belief that they were seeking a kind of demon that could only be trapped by a pyxis. James's vision of the Shadow Realm, and the reason to think that the demon would be on Tower Bridge. As he spoke, Magnus looked more and more curious. By the end of the story, Magnus had seated himself on the edge of the fountain, his long legs stretched out in front of him. "This is quite a collection of suppositions," he said when James was done. "But I must ask, especially you, Lucy and James, why do you not seek your parents' assistance with this? Why the secrecy?"
"Because we made a promise," said Matthew, "to the person who gave us the key that unlocked a great deal of this information, and we can't break it."
Magnus smiled an odd, sideways smile.
"Ragnar told me that he trusted you with some information, and it appears that you have not betrayed his trust. Not many shadow hunters would honor such a vow made to a downworlder. Since I am Ragnar's best friend, or at least the only person who can tolerate him for long stretches, I will keep your secret."
He glanced from James to Lucy.
"In days past, when I knew your parents well, they probably would have been spearheading this plan."
He stood up.
"But now they are no longer children. They are parents, and thus devoted to something they love more than their own lives. So indeed, perhaps they should not be told."
Even Matthew had no response to that.
"Well, good luck," Magnus said, picking up his walking stick. "I suppose I shall go to Hatchard's for a few hours. There is no better distraction in this world than losing oneself in books for a while."
Cordelia stepped forward, her hands held out as if to prevent him from leaving. "Mr. Bane," she said, "I know it is a great deal to ask, especially when you have promised to keep our secrets, but would you help us?"
Magnus tapped gloved fingers on the head of his cane. "You're a Carstairs, right? Cordelia Carstairs?"
"Yes, I'm Jem's cousin," Cordelia said. "Look, we know this is a wild plan, but it could save many lives. You needn't help us directly or get involved in the fighting. I understand you feel loyalty to our parents, but you could help us very much just by casting a spell to keep mundanes off Tower Bridge while we venture onto it. It would be safer for them, too."
Magnus hesitated. It was utterly silent in the sanctuary.
Cordelia imagined she could hear the sound of the blood pounding in her ears as Magnus considered her request. At last, the warlock shrugged a silk-suited shoulder.
"Very well," he said. "Even though that green bastard Ragnar has haired off to Capri, I don't think he would have wanted you to put yourselves in danger because of a promise to him. I'll keep an eye on you. But remember, if I see anything I think Will and Tessa need to know, I will tell them about it post-haste."
After gathering what they needed from the weapons room, James was loaded down with more than a dozen of Christopher's specially designed throwing knives, the group made their way down Ludgate Hill and Cannon Street as the sun set over the city. James caught himself stealing glances at Cordelia when he was sure he wouldn't be observed. She was deep in conversation with Lucy, their heads bent together as they walked. Cordelia's flame-dark hair had been pulled back into a smooth chignon, leaving the light brown nape of her neck exposed. James tried not to think about the fact that he knew what it was like to curl his fingers around the back of that neck while he kissed her mouth. He was sure that if he did think about it, it would drive him mad, and he would be no further use to anyone. Those moments in the whispering room with Cordelia had been like nothing else in his life. No other experience was comparable, and certainly no moment with Grace. But what did that say about him? Hadn't he loved Grace, and wasn't love the same as desire? Didn't the one grow from the other? And he couldn't love Cordelia. It wasn't possible for him to have been in love with Grace mere days ago and have transferred his affections so quickly. He wished to talk to Cordelia, desperately. But what on earth would he say? He couldn't tell her he loved her, but neither could he express regret for what had happened the night before. If he had to choose between a long life of peace and happiness and another 5 minutes like the one he'd spent with Cordelia in the Whispering Room, he dared not guess what he would choose.
Are you all right? To James's surprise, Magnus had joined him as they passed the Church of St. Margaret Patton's. I have to admit, Magnus added, I had been hoping to talk to you tonight, so perhaps this development is fortuitous. Why would you be hoping to talk to me? James slid his hands into the pockets of his gear jacket. It buttoned closely to the body, allowing for ease of movement while fighting. If you are concerned that I have continued my career of shooting chandeliers, you will be relieved to know that according to the Clave, I have moved on to vandalizing greenhouses. Magnus merely raised an eyebrow. Henry, he said. Before he went to Idris, he sent me a vial of dirt to analyze, said he couldn't make head or tail of it. He also said you gave it to him. James had nearly forgotten that Magnus and Henry were good friends and had, famously, invented the magic that powered portals together. And? He said cautiously. It's strange stuff, Magnus said. In fact, it isn't from this world. They had reached the bottom of Great Tower Street and were nearing the Tower of London. Flags waved from the turrets of the White Tower, backlit dimly against the last fitful gleams of the setting sun. Magnus nimbly avoided a group of tourists with box cameras and steered James down Tower Hill, a hand on his shoulder. James lowered his voice, though the others were a distance away. Matthew, who was carrying the pyxis, had stopped to point out something about the tower to Cordelia. What do you mean? You know that there are other realms, said Magnus. Other worlds than this. Think of the universe, then, as like a honeycomb, each of its chambers a different realm, so some chambers lie next to one another. Demons come from them, yes, they travel through the dimensions to reach our world and others. Magnus nodded. There are some worlds ruled by demons, usually greater demons. Those worlds can be imbued with the very essence of those creatures. The dirt you gave Henry comes from one such place, a dimension under the power of the demon Belphegor. Belphegor? The name was immediately familiar. He's one of the princes of hell, isn't he? I know what you're thinking about, said Magnus, tapping his walking stick against the cobblestones. Jem also contacted me about you. All roads lead to James Herondale these days, it seems. James rubbed his cold hands together. The wind off the river was sharp. Jem contacted you. About your grandfather, said Magnus. He told me that he was a prince of hell. He glanced at the darkening sky. You are wondering now if it might be Belphegor because the realm that you visit belongs to him. Wouldn't that make a kind of sense? Said James. It might. It might mean nothing at all. I can tell you that there is no record of anyone citing Belphegor in more than a century. Magnus hesitated. Jem told me you were desperate to know who your grandfather is. My own father is a prince of hell. They are dark angels, James, intelligent and cunning and manipulative. They bear the knowledge of thousands of years of life. Like angels, they have seen the face of the divine, but they turned away from it. They have chosen darkness, and that choice has reverberated through eternity. They cannot be killed, only wounded, and no good can come from knowing a prince of hell. They can never cause you anything but sorrow. But wouldn't it be better for me to know? I summoned my father once. It was the worst mistake of my life. James, you are not defined by this blood in you. I have found no trace, no hint of who your grandfather is, and I advise Jem to cease looking. It does not matter. You are who you are, made by the sum of your choices and actions, not a teaspoon of demon's blood. So you don't think it's Belphegor, said James. What about Samael? Magnus snorted. Good Lord, you are determined. I recall seeking a demon for your father once. He was equally stubborn. He pointed with his walking stick. Look, here we are. They were in front of the bridge. Though it was quite dark now and the gas lamps were lit, there was still a good amount of traffic, even the occasional motor car purring along Tower Bridge approach. The others had begun to gather around. Reluctantly, James dropped the topic of his grandfather.
So, do you think you can do it? He asked Magnus. Create a distraction, or should we come back later when there are fewer mundanes about?
Magnus's eyes glittered. No need for that, he said. He stepped to the railing along the river's edge, where a high wall dropped down to a stony beach that ran beside and below the bridge. With a flourish, he drew off his gloves and tucked them into his waistcoat pocket. Then he held out his hands. Blue fire sparked at his fingertips. Light arced over the Thames. Bright as 1,000 naphtha beacons, it formed a glimmering path laid from bank to bank of the Thames. James heard Cordelia gasp in wonder as the light rose and twined, forming the ghostly shape of a shimmering tower bridge made of light. It was perfect down to the last detail, from the towers to the spiderweb cables and gleaming chains. Magnus lowered his hands. He was breathing hard.
It's spectacular, said Thomas, and there was a look of real wonder on his face that James was glad to see.
But it will not appear to mundanes as it does to you, said Magnus. They will not see the real bridge. They will see this instead. Look.
He indicated an oncoming Hansen cab with a wave of his hand. The small group of shadow hunters gaped as it swung toward the glimmering illusion of Tower Bridge and onto the bridge deck. The wheels of the hansom rattled over the glimmering tarmac.
Oh, good. I was afraid the bridge was going to collapse, said Lucy, as more carriages followed the cab.
Magnus seemed to have thrown up a glamour over the entrance to the real bridge, as all the traffic, pedestrian and even omnibuses, seemed to be swerving unconsciously toward Magnus's secondary, shining structure.
Magnus would never create a bridge that would collapse, said Matthew.
His green eyes were shining, and James felt a rush of affection for his parapetai. Matthew had always loved magic. It was probably why he seemed so at home in the Hell Ruel and places like it, surrounded by enchanted fire and starry-eyed warlocks.
Thank you, said Magnus dryly. If you're going to capture that demon, you'd better get to it. I can only keep this illusion going for so long.
James inclined his head. Thank you. Magnus just shook his head slightly.
Good luck. Don't get killed.
James had already turned and was making his way through the archway that led to the steps up to the bridge, the others close behind and around him. All of them held seraph blades except Cordelia. As always, Cortana glimmered in her hand. James had thought there seemed a sort of shadow hanging over the bridge, a darkness that he had attributed to the shadow of the glamour Magnus had cast. But as they gained the top of the steps, seraph blades drawn, the world began to darken in front of James's eyes. The gas lamps flickered wildly and went out. The stone towers cracked and blackened, deep, jagged lines spreading across the pavement beneath them. The wind picked up, and the heavy steel suspension chains seemed to sway. The clouds overhead roiled and darkened in the dark grey sky. There was an acid tang to the air, as if a storm was oncoming.
Jamie!
Matthew was still beside him. As James turned to look at his parabatai, he realised that Matthew's hair looked white, like an old man's. The colour was leaching out of everything, turning the world to a photograph. He sucked in a breath.
Are you all right? You look...
I can see the shadow realm.
James's own voice sounded hollow to him, distant and echoing.
It's all around me, Math. The bridge is splintering.
Matthew's hand clasped his arm. His fingers seemed the only warm thing in a world made of ice and ashes.
There's nothing wrong with the bridge. Everything's all right, Jamie.
James wasn't sure that it was true. The bridge looked warped and broken. From the cracks in the granite poured a reddish light, the blood-coloured light from his vision. The others were fanning out, looking up and down the bridge. Clouds were scudding back and forth above the bridge like anxious messengers. James tipped his head back. More clouds were gathering directly overhead. They were heavy and reddish, almost wet-looking, as if they were filled with blood. James narrowed his eyes. He had thought he could see stars through the clouds, a few faint stars hovering above the bridge's upper walkways. They were not stars, he realized, instinctively sliding a throwing knife from the scabbard at his waist. Stars did not have pupils or scarlet irises. Stars did not blink. James drew his arm back and flung the blade. It came screaming out of the air like a diving hawk, a demon the size of an omnibus, its yellowish coat streaked with dried blood. It shot straight for James, a blur of black teeth and red talons, and a haft of gold where the hilt of James's knife protruded from its shoulder. James stood upright on the bridge, his right arm outstretched, and flung a second blade. The demon ducked out of the path of the knife and landed on the bridge, taloned feet splayed. It began to move towards the Nephilim. Cordelia raised Cortana, its golden blades slicing the air. All around her she could hear voices as angel blades were named and blazed up in light. Aleleth! Adamiel! Jophiel! The demon bared its teeth as seraph light illuminated the bridge. Cordelia could see it more clearly now, the body of a mangy lion with elongated legs, each one ending in a massive taloned paw. Its head was snake-like and scaled, with glittering red eyes and a triple row of serrated jaws. Its scorpion tail lashed back and forth as it paced toward James, a low growl coming from its throat.
By the angel, Cordelia thought, we were right. It is a mandacore.
James caught up a seraph blade as the demon paced towards them. Raguel! The blade flared up as the demon lunged, teeth bared. James flung himself sideways, avoiding its slashing claws. Matthew dropped the pyxis and ran forward to flank James, seraph blade flashing. The tip sliced across the demon's shoulder as it leaped back, causing it to howl. It reared up, and Cordelia heard Lucy cry out as the demon seemed to tremble all over. A grotesque lump swelled under the skin of its side, swelled, and then burst into a sticky black thing. Cordelia tried not to gag as the thing peeled away from the mandacore, dropping to the ground. As it rose to its feet, Cordelia recognized it as one of the creatures that had attacked them in Regent's Park, a Cora demon. It shot toward Matthew, who swore and slashed out at it with his seraph blade. Cordelia charged forward, only to be met with another of the Cora demons. The demon had shed several others. Two leaped toward Christopher and Thomas, springing through the air like black spiders. Lucy ran to join them, impaling one of the Cora from behind. It vanished, spattering ash and ichor, as Christopher and Thomas dispatched the other. Cordelia whipped Cortana forward with a slashing motion, shredding the demon in front of her with such force that the blade passed through the Cora, carried on, and embedded itself in the granite railing of the bridge. She yanked it free as the demon disappeared with a howl. The blade of Cortana was smeared with black, but it was undamaged.
I suppose it really can cut anything, she thought, dazedly, before turning to rejoin the battle.
She pushed forward as James hurled a knife, pinning one of the shadow demons to the cables of the bridge like a hideous butterfly. It struggled and hissed as Matthew and James leaped up onto the bridge's railing, their seraph blades blazing in their hands as they slew shadow after shadow. But it didn't matter how many of these shadow creatures they killed, Cordelia knew. The mandacore could make an infinite number of Cora. It was the source of them, and the source had to be destroyed.
Christopher!
She heard Thomas shout. She spun and saw that a group of Cora were starting to circle Christopher. Even as Christopher tried to fight his way free, the circle tightened. Lucy and Thomas raced toward him. James and Matthew leaped down from the railing, but Cordelia, raising her sword, raced the other way, toward the Mandacore. It had been watching Christopher and the others, licking its lips as the Cora closed in. Now it reared back as Cordelia approached, but too late. She hurled herself forward, Cortana sinking deep into the creature's torso. Hot ichor spilled onto her hand, and the world seemed to tilt around her, the colour rushing out of it like blood from a wound. She stood on the bridge among black and white shadows and twisted, gnarled trees. The suspension cables hung like rotting vines, blackening in the night air. She yanked Cortana back, gasping, and fell to her knees. Suddenly she felt a hand on her arm. She was wrenched to her feet and looked with surprise at Matthew, staring at her, his face very white.
Cordelia?
She's all right! It was Lucy, spattered with blood and ichor, clutching the Pyxis box. The others had fanned out around Cordelia. James had his blade in one hand, his gaze trained on the roaring, bleeding Mandacore. The bridge was empty of Cora. Cordelia had distracted the Mandacore just long enough for the others to kill the shadow creatures, but the Mandacore was growling now, another lump already beginning to swell on its back.
Now, Lucy cried, we must get it into the Pyxis.
Put the box on the ground. It was Thomas, vaulting up onto the railing, his bolus in his hand.
Christopher, say the words.
Christopher stepped closer to the Pyxis. The Mandacore, realizing what was happening at last, charged. Christopher shouted, in a voice that cut through the noise of battle,
Tham Tholach Thachembaor!
The alchemical symbols carved on the Pyxis box lit, as if the lines on the wood were burning. They seemed to bloom on the wood, glowing like coals. A spear of light shot from the Pyxis, and then another and another. The beams of light arrowed along the bridge, wrapping around the Mandacore in a bright cage. It gave a howl. The cage of light flared up one last time and was sucked back into the Pyxis, the Mandacore vanishing with it. There was a long silence. James mopped at the blood on his face, his golden eyes burning. Matthew's hand was still wrapped around Cordelia's arm.
I don't mean to put a damper on things, said Thomas at last, but did that work? Because it seems rather...
The Pyxis exploded. The shadow hunters yelled and dived out of the way as wooden shrapnel blew in all directions. Wind tore across the bridge, flattening Cordelia to her knees, a howling hurricane of fire-scented air. At last the howling died down. The bridge was empty and silent, only the wind blowing a bit of discarded refuse back and forth across the roadway. Cordelia rose to her feet and reached down a hand to help Lucy up after her. Ahead, she could still see the glimmering light of Magnus's bridge, mundane traffic still making its way across it.
Too easy, Thomas finished. His face was smeared with soot.
Bloody hell, said James, reaching for a knife, just as the world seemed to explode around them. Out of the wind and air, the Mandacore suddenly appeared, twice as big as it had been before, and clothed in ragged darkness. It rose above them like a shadow drawn in blood, its head thrown back, each of its talons gleaming like a dagger. James flung his knife, just as the Mandacore sprang toward him, shadows spilling from it and racing across the bridge in all directions. The world had turned grey and black again. James could see London on either side of the river, but it was a ruined London, the tower shattered and broken, fires burning along the wharves, the blackened spires of churches standing as skeletons against a smoke-stained sky. He could hear his friends all around him, their shouts and cries as they fought back the shadows, but he could no longer see them. He was alone in his nightmare realm. The Mandacor leaped toward him and seized hold of him. James had been braced for an attack, but this was something different. The demon was holding him fast, claws sunk into the front of his gear jacket, its lips curled back from its teeth.
"Come with me," the demon hissed. "Come with me, child of demons, to where you will be honored. You see the same world I do. You see the world as it really is. I know who your mother is and who your grandfather is. Come with me."
James went cold. "I know who your mother is and who your grandfather is." He thought of the demon in the park. "Why destroy your own kind?" "I am a shadow hunter," he said. "I will not listen to your lies."
"You know I speak the truth," said the Mandacor,
its hot breath searing James's skin.
"I swear on the names of Asmodeus, of Belial, of Belphegor and Samael that I can end this scourge if you will come with me. No more need die."
James froze. A demon, swearing on the names of the princes of hell. A voice in the back of his head screamed, "Do it. Go with him. End the sickening, the dying." Another voice, quieter but steadier, whispered, "Demons lie. Even when they swear, they lie." "No," he said, but his voice shook. The Mandacor hissed.
"So ungrateful," it said. "You alone can walk between the world of earth and the dark kingdom."
James stared into the demon's blood-red eyes. "Do you mean the kingdom of Belphegor?" The Mandacor made an awful noise. After a moment, James realized it was chuckling.
"So like a human," it said, "to know so much, yet know so little."
James opened his mouth to speak, just as an arcing golden light seared the air.
"Leave him alone,"
Cordelia shouted, as Cortana divided the darkness. James jerked free, rolling away from the demon and up onto his feet, as Cordelia threw herself at the Mandacor. The gold of the sword was the only colour in the black and white world, the gold and the flame red of her hair. Cortana whipped back and forth, its blade slashed across the demon's chest, opening a long black wound. The demon howled and struck out, its massive paws slamming into Cordelia and sending her flying. Cortana tumbled from her hand, skidding across the bridge as she hurtled over the railing with a scream. James heard Lucy scream, "Daisy!" and the sound of a distant splash. The world seemed to go silent as he bent to seize up Cortana. He strode toward the Mandacor, his blood burning. The demon had sunk to its forelegs. It was bleeding from the wound that Cordelia had dealt it, ichor spreading around it like a shadow.
"You cannot slay me here,"
it snarled as James came near.
"My roots are deep within another realm. As I feed there, I grow stronger. I am a legion who cannot be touched."
With a final hiss, it vanished. Color sprang back into the world. James spun, Cortana in hand. He could see the bridge as it had always been, dull gold and white in the moonlight, and his friends running toward him. He did not see Lucy. He remembered her calling out Cordelia's name. He remembered the sound of the water. "Cordelia! Cordelia!" "Where is she?" Matthew gasped as he neared James. "Where's Cordelia?" "She's in the river," James said, and began to run. Lucy stared frantically at the river. She could see steps leading down to it from what looked like a passage through a building beside the bridge. She hurtled down the stairs to ground level and found herself in a dimly lit, narrow street lined with tall warehouses, blackened with soot and grime. There was the passage, a dark hole in the nearest building. She ran to it and saw stone stairs descending to a faint gleam at the bottom. The river. She raced to where an old cobbled ramp led into the water, an empty barge moored beside it. The river flowed by, black and silent under the clouded sky. Mist rose from the water. There was no sign of Cordelia. Panic mounted in Lucy's stomach as she stared out into the black water. She didn't know if Cordelia could swim, and even a strong swimmer could drown in the currents of the Thames. And what if Cordelia had hit her head, or had been knocked out by the long fall from the bridge? A sob caught in her throat. She dropped her serif blade, which sputtered against the muddy pebbles of the bank, and began to fumble with the buttons of her gear jacket. The water didn't look very deep. She wasn't a strong swimmer, but she could try. In the distance, she could see the fog-enshrouded shape of a barge arrowing slowly down the centre of the river.
Help! She shouted. Help! Someone has fallen in the river!
She raced along the bank, waving frantically at the barge, which was disappearing into the mist.
Bring her out, please! Lucy screamed. Help me!
But the barge had vanished. She could see figures on the bridge above her, the eerie light of serif blades. The boys were still fighting. She could never reach Magnus in time, nor could he put aside what he was doing. He had to remain utterly focused on the illusion of the false bridge. She would have to go into the river, even if she might drown herself. She took a step forward, her boot coming down in the shallow, dark water. She shivered as the icy liquid seeped through the leather. She took another step in and froze. The river was moving, surging about 10 feet from the bridge. The water had begun to churn, yellowish-grey foam sliding along its dark surface. A bitter smell wafted across the water, rotten fish and old blood and the age-old mud of the riverbed. Lucy's foot slipped on a loose pebble. She went to her knees as the waters of the Thames began to rise and part like the water of the Red Sea. A shine of white broke the black surface of the water. She stared for an uncomprehending instant until she realised what she was seeing. The shine was moonlight on river-washed bone. Figures rose from the water, pallid as ash. A woman with long, streaming hair, her face bloated and black. A woman in a wide-skirted gown, her throat cut, her eyes black and empty. A massive man with the marks of a rope still dark around his neck, wearing the arrow-stamped uniform of a prisoner. He was carrying Cordelia in his arms. Ghosts rose up on either side of him, a veritable army of the drowned and dead. In the centre of them all, the ghost prisoner held Cordelia, her body limp, her bright hair soaked and streaming down over her shoulders. Her gear was dark with river water, all of it sluicing off her as the ghosts carried her inexorably forward to the riverbank and laid her down.
Thank you, Lucy whispered.
The ghost prisoner straightened up. For a long moment, all the ghosts simply stared at Lucy, their eyes empty hollows of darkness. Then they vanished.
Cordelia?
Lucy tried to rise, to go to Cordelia, but her damp knees gave out under her. In the distance, she was aware that the fight on the bridge had stopped. She knew James and the others would come to her, but every second seemed stretched out to a year. Her energy seemed to have fled her body completely. Every breath was a chore.
Cordelia?
She whispered again, and this time Cordelia stirred. With relief so overwhelming Lucy was almost sick, She saw her friend's lashes flutter against her cheeks. Cordelia rolled to her side and began to cough, her body spasming as she choked up river water. Lucy sagged back, half delirious. The boys were coming down the steps of the bridge now, racing toward her and Cordelia, calling out their names. A distance behind them came Magnus, hurrying but looking exhausted. As he came closer, he slowed and gave Lucy a peculiar, searching look. Or maybe she was imagining it. At least there were arms around her, Lucy thought, arms holding her up, wrapping her close. Only then did it strike her as strange. She looked up and saw a face hovering above hers, white as salt with jade-green eyes. Behind his dark head, the sky seemed to be spinning. Around his neck, his golden locket burned like a star. As she watched, he touched it with two fingers, his lips tightening. "Jesse Blackthorn," Lucy whispered, as the world swam away and the dim light faded. He was the one, she realized. He had called up the ghosts. He had saved Cordelia.
"Why did you do that?"
But the darkness drew her down before he could reply.